Hey, welcome to the Malloy Show. Thanks for tuning in. It is Wednesday. We're off Friday, right? Yeah, we're not going to be here. Hold on. Have to turn the space heater off. It's colder than a well digger's ass here in Georgia. Brad Friedman will be sitting in Friday. We'll be here tomorrow. This hour is sponsored by Evolvefish.com, the internet's best seller of progressive stickers, buttons, and t-shirts, including the 10 Reasons Why Beer is Better Than Jesus brew glass. Check them out at evolvefish.com. You know, all the Jews are going, hey, I'll buy one of those. Do that. 10 Reasons Why Beer is Better Than Jesus brew glass. All right. All right, evolvefish.com. Okay, play the music, Kathy. Play that little, some of you will remember this. Go ahead, let her rip. Do-do-do-do.
It's a bomb, duck and cover.
Dum, diddle dum dum, diddle dum dum, diddle dum dum. There was a turtle by the name of Bert, and Bert the turtle was very alert. When danger threatened him, he never got hurt. He knew just what to do.
What do you do, Bert?
He's duck and cover. Duck and cover.
Okay.
He did what we all must learn to do.
Okay, that brings back some of the weirder aspects of my childhood. We were the only family on the block that didn't have a bomb shelter, and I felt deprived. Why are we playing that? Well, did you know that the United States government, starting back in 2002 under the Bush crime family and picked up by corporatism's favorite president so far, Barack Obama, the idea that surviving a nuclear war is possible. I love the way New York Times puts it. Listen to this. Suppose the unthinkable happened and terrorists struck New York, or another big city, with an atom bomb. What should people there do? Well, the government has a surprising new message. Do not flee. Get inside any stable building, and don't come out till officials say it's safe. Kind of like they did in Lower Manhattan after the 9/11 attacks, huh? You crazy goddamn... Where do we live? Listen to this. The advice is based on recent scientific analyses showing that a nuclear attack is much more survivable if you immediately shield yourself from the lethal radiation that follows a blast. A simple tactic seen as saving hundreds of thousands of lives. Oh my God. They're reactivating the fear of nuclear bombs. What a nice Christmas present. The Times goes on, even staying in a car, the studies show, would reduce casualties by more than 50%. And hunkering down. Who wrote this? Hunkering down in a basement would be better by far. Who wrote that? William J. Broad at the New York Times. Hunkering down in a basement would be better by far. But a problem for the Obama administration is how to spread the word without seeming alarmist about a subject that few politicians care to consider, let alone discuss. So, officials are proceeding gingerly in a campaign to educate the public. W. Craig Fugit, or Fugit, administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, that be FEMA. Mr. Fugit says, quote, "We have to get past the mental block that says it's too terrible to think about. We have to be ready to deal with it and help people learn how to best protect themselves." So saith W. Carl Fugit. Is that how you pronounce it? Fugit? F-U-G-A-T-E? Fugit? Fugit? I guess, you know, the way you say the U makes all the difference in the world. Well, that's what it says here, Kathy. I'm not looking to get any of our affiliates in trouble. It says W. Craig Fugit. That's what it says. Oh, it's Fugate? Fugate? It looks like Fugate to me. "We have to get past the mental block that says it's too terrible to think about. We have to get past the mental block that says it's too Okay, Mr. Fugit, what would you suggest we do? Let's get past that. It's not too terrible to think about. No, it's not too terrible. All right, let me see. New York City. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, how many people are there? 12 million? Basements. Y'all get into basements. Officials say they are moving aggressively to conduct drills, prepare communication guides. Communication guides? Have these people never heard of that wave pulse, that thermonuclear wave pulse, boom, that immediately knocks out all communication? Officials say they are moving aggressively to conduct drills, prepare communications guides, and raise awareness among emergency planners of how to educate the public. Are we going to have a new jingle? A new little song? Can you play that again, Kathy? Duck and cover. Duck and cover. Myrtle or Ertle the Turtle, who is very, according to Mr. Fugit, Ertle the Turtle is right there with it. Yeah.
There was a turtle by the name of Bert, and Bert the turtle was very alert.
He was alert.
A danger threatened him, he never got hurt. He knew just what to do. He'd duck and cover.
Yeah.
Duck and cover. He did what we all must learn to do. You and you
duck and cover.
And cover.
Yeah. Over the years, Washington has sought to prevent nuclear terrorism and limit its harm mainly by governmental means. It has spent tens of billions of dollars on everything from intelligence and securing nuclear materials to equipping local authorities with radiation detectors. Beep, 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 beep. The new wave is citizen preparedness. For people to survive the initial blast, the main advice is to fight the impulse to run. Don't run! Stand still and die! And instead seek shelter from lethal radioactivity. Even a few hours of protection, officials say, can greatly increase survival rates. You may live 7 months instead of three. You may watch your arms, the flesh slough off your bones, but at least you'll have your legs. Administration officials argue that the Cold War created an unrealistic sense of fatalism about a terrorist nuclear attack. An official deeply involved in the planning, who spoke on condition of anonymity, said, quote, "It's more survivable than most people think. The key is avoiding nuclear fallout. More on this in a minute. No, you're not in a time warp. This is in the New York Times today.
Flying Monkey Right, it's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by EvolveFish.com, the internet's first seller of progressive stickers, buttons, and t-shirts, including the 10 reasons why beer is better than Jesus brew glass. Check them out, EvolveFish.com. So New York Times is enabling the fear of nuclear bombs to slide back into. We've got two generations out here who don't have the fear. My God, the only people that really have the fear are people my age and maybe down 15 years. Everybody below that,
what, there's still nuclear bombs around? Really? I didn't know that. Oh, well, whatever. North Korea has them, right? Oh, boom.
All of a sudden, it's necessary to inject this now. Nuclear weaponry is your friend. You can survive. All you have to do is stay in your building, get in your basement. Let's see. In the South and in California, there are very few basements. In Florida, they don't exist. Where are they going to dig basement? In a sandbox? I mean, underneath houses in Florida is a slab of concrete. Underneath that, about 8 inches down, water. So it's necessary now to bring this up. And this started with Bush, but it's being carried over by Obama. We had the candy-colored tangerine flake baby. Let's scare the bejesus out of them with our color-coded terror codes. And now, can't go back to that. Let's go way back. Let's go back to the 50s. Let's go back, duck and cover. Let's go back to getting the little kiddies. You know, when I was a kid, my brothers and sister and I, all about the same age, I think 6 years separated the oldest from the youngest, we had a game we played when I was a kid. We used to play it in the backyard in Toledo, Ohio. And here's how the game would work. We four siblings would be in the backyard, I don't know, building a fort. Usually we built forts out of cardboard boxes. You know, I'm sure you did that too, right? And we'd be, you know, just playing like kids will do. And then one of us, whoever wanted to do it, would suddenly scream out a sentence and everybody would duck and cover. And the last one to duck and cover was dead. And the sentence was, "Flash of light!" Wasn't even a sentence, just a phrase. Flash of light. That was how we played the game. Flash of light! Because we saw the movies, you know.
There'll be a flash of light. Bobby and his little sister Mary Lou immediately slammed their bodies up against a brick building. Bobby, of course, being the male, shields Mary Lou. And over Bobby's head, he puts his notebook. Both will survive the nuclear bomb because they ducked and covered.
But we've got 150 million people in this country who don't have the ingrown visceral fear of this. In my generation, we kids figured out real quick, hey, man, you ain't going to survive this. What are you talking about? Duck and cover my ass. What are you talking about? We knew what nuclear bombs did. We saw the television stuff. We even occasionally in Life magazine or Look magazine or one of those magazines, we'd see pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki post-blast. Duck and cover. So among a lot of us kids, the ones that were going hysterically insane out of fear, those of us who managed to somehow deal with this threat of potential instant blink of an eye as when Jesus comes, nuclear annihilation, the way we dealt with it, we saw it as just jive turkey nonsense. What? Oh, stop, man. Nuclear, but we just simply didn't believe it would happen. That's when we were in second grade. When we were in fourth grade, we figured it out. There ain't no surviving no nuclear bomb. Did you see the pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Did you see those pictures? Did you see those pictures from Alamogordo, New Mexico? There ain't surviving none of this. Duck and cover. Well, if they mean duck about 150 yards down under shields of lead and concrete, but who has that? Duck and cover. So how did we deal with it? We saw it for what it was. Instant death, and therefore it couldn't hurt. So now the New York Times, enabling this guy named W. Craig Fugate, administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, in an interview, quote, "We have to get past the mental block that says it's too terrible to think about. We have to be ready to deal with it and help people learn how to best protect themselves." You never thought this would happen, did you? Huh? That they would pull this bunny out of the hat? Hello?
Exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me over and over.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malone.
Yeah. 25 before the hour. You know, Sheila sent this link to me tonight from the Times. Somehow I missed it if it was in today's paper. U.S. rethinks strategy for the unthinkable. That's the headline, at least online. And, you know, so I started reading this a couple hours ago. And the immediate thought, why are we talking about this? Why do we have somebody named W. Craig Fugate, administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, saying in an interview, we have to get past the mental block that says it's too terrible to think about. We have to be ready to deal with it. What does that mean? Why is this coming out now? Remember, things like this don't just pop up into the news like a weather forecast or a report about snow on, I-94 that has 10,000 vehicles tied up. Somebody somewhere makes a decision to say, okay, let's get the New York Times to put this article out about a nuclear war is survival. All you have to do is just get in your basement and hold on to your ass and wait until we tell you to come out. Now, somebody has to actually think that through and make the phone call to, in this case, William J. Broad at the New York Times and say, hey, we want to give you some information here on a story about rethinking the unthinkable about nuclear war. What's the point in this? Why would this come out now? Is it because we're getting too lax here in our fear meter has sort of fallen off since the bad old days of the Bush crime family? Is it time to pump it up a bit? You know, pump it up to global thermonuclear war? Is it something that WikiLeaks is going to drop on us, no pun intended, with cables and diplomatic newspeak back and forth that indicates that this is being planned? I mean, after all, what would really help this global financial catastrophe? What would really, really, really help right now? Right. A nuclear war. It would accomplish an awful lot, wouldn't it? Certainly clean out the plumbing. Maybe get rid of half the population. It might take 3 or 4 years for half the population to die of radiation poisoning. But and think of all the money that Halliburton would make and Kellogg Brown and Root rebuilding everything. I mean, cities devastated, laid waste. Corpses every place. Oh, my God. Think of the new industries that could be developed. I mean, there were a lot of entrepreneurs that got involved after Hiroshima and Nagasaki were turned into charnel houses. So imagine if you could increase that by a factor of 10, 20, 30. I mean, those bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki compared to what we have now. Firecrackers. Are you kidding me? Bing, bang, boom. Now we have bombs. We have conventional bombs that can do more damage than those nukes. Think of our nukes. What a great way to end this nonsense with the Chinese and that little bald-headed bastard that runs Russia, always taking off his shirt. What is it? What's he trying to say? He's going to wrestle bears? He needs to be, you know, kind of flicked into the infinite too, doesn't he? Who else we want to get rid of? Why are they telling us this? Fear? Fear and loathing? Loathing and fear? Why? Erwin Redliner, a doctor and director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University, says, quote, "There's no penetration of the message coming out of the federal government. It's deeply frustrating that we seem unable to bridge the gap between the new insights and using them to inform public policy." What he's trying to say there is nobody's paying any attention. Here. A nuclear blast produces a blinding flash, burning heat, and crushing wind. The fireball and mushroom cloud carry radioactive particles upward, and the wind sends them near and far. Do, do, do. Near and far. The government initially knew little about radioactive fallout, but in the 1950s, as the Cold War intensified, scientists monitoring test explosions learned that the tiny particles throbbed with fission products, fragments of split atoms, many highly radioactive and potentially lethal. Tiny particles throbbed with fission products.
But after a burst of interest in fallout shelters, the public and even the government grew increasingly skeptical about civil defense as nuclear arsenals grew to hold thousands of warheads. The Department of Homeland Security financed a multi-agency modeling effort led by the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California. The scientists looked at Washington, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and other big cities using computers to simulate details of the urban landscape and terrorist bombs. The results were revealing. For instance, the scientists found that a bomb's flash would blind many drivers, causing accidents and complicating evacuation. Blinding drivers, causing accidents. This is in today's New York Times. I'm not reading to you something from the Chicago Tribune of 1953. This is now! The results were revealing. Scientists found that a bomb's flash would blind many drivers, causing accidents and complicating evacuation. The big surprise was how taking shelter for as little as several hours made a huge difference in survival rates. Brooke Budemeyer, a Livermore health physicist, told an L.A. conference, quote, "This has been a game changer." He showed a slide labeled, "How many lives can sheltering save?" For you folks listening in L.A., here you go. If people in Los Angeles, a mile or more from ground zero of an attack, took no shelter, Mr. Budemeyer said, there would be 285,000 casualties from fallout in that region. Taking shelter in a place with minimal protection, like a car or a coffin, would cut that figure to 125,000 deaths and injuries. A shallow basement would further reduce it to 45,000. And the core of a big office building or an underground garage would provide the best shelter of all. Oh, there you go. From 285,000 deaths all the way down to 45. Wow. The government has put out a handbook. It was put out during the Bush crime family's heyday, and it's been revised now by the Obama administration. The handbook says, quote, the most lives will be saved in the first 60 minutes through sheltering in place. There's a new term for you, like standing online to get a job, sheltering in place to avoid nuclear death. Jonathan Schell. Paging Jonathan Schell. Jonathan, we need to read your book again. The Fate of the Earth. Jonathan. Why is this story being bandied about now? Is there a resurgence in the nuclear fallout shelter business? What do you want to bet Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root are involved in that one? We'll be right back.
This is the power of the future, and the future marches on, and they're calling all their favors. All the political games, while the spills fill the rivers and settle into place. I know the minds behind them are riddled full of holes. Not to be trusted with their hands at the controls. Their eyesight is twisted by the glory of their careers. The heaped praise of flattery is music to their ears. To listen to them talk about how it hasn't happened yet. Saipan, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Russian roulette. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Russian roulette.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom.
Unfiltered, only with Mike Malone.
You knocked me out, out off my feet. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, bang, bang.
Boom, 10 before boom, the hour. Thank God we have a couple of rationalists who listen to and contribute to this program. People like Prairie 2 and Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Prairie 2 weighs in on that one, on the nuclear bomb thing. Ever the rationalist, here he is. Prairie 2 writes, given Cheney having destroyed our only defense, Brewster Jennings, and the Republicans doing their best to spread the weapons around by holding up the START treaty and encouraging all the crazies to develop them if they can, then cranking up public awareness is reasonable. A certain amount of fear is a good thing. Not that going after the kids with drills was ever a good idea. It led to a generation with irrational fatalism, which doesn't lead to good public policy either. Okay. Jeff in Washington State. Mike, you might want to mention to the kids out there that even if we survive the blast and the fallout too, the mutant giant ants or gargantuan spiders will get us. When I was a kid in Seattle, we would play Escaping from the Giant Slug. Hey, Ma, hurry up and get the bucket of salt. Ah! And from Sue. Mike, I'm listening to your show tonight, and I honestly cannot believe my ears. They're now trying to convince us that we can survive a nuclear bomb if we just stay inside. How well did that work for the people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki? Oh, God. Those that stayed inside had their homes blown apart around them. Some of those that were outside were vaporized, and their bodies left shadows on the concrete. Those who weren't vaporized had the pattern of their clothes fabric burned into their skin. Others suffered nuclear blast cataracts that rendered them blind. And lest we forget, the lethal doses of radiation that nuclear bombs are known for. Looks like I picked the wrong time to sell my lead bustiers on eBay. Thank goodness for having your pronunciation of Dr. Fuggett and my fifth bowl of eggnog for the day to bring some levity to this report. Hugs and hiccups, Sue. Well, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I really don't. F-U-G-A-T-E? W. Craig Fuggett? Man. This hour is sponsored by EvolveFish.com. Probably not for long. The Internet's first seller of progressive stickers, buttons, T-shirts, including the 10 reasons why beer is better than Jesus brew glass. Check them out at EvolveFish.com. Bradley Manning, the 22-year-old United States Army private, accused of leaking classified documents to WikiLeaks, has never been convicted of that crime or of any other crime. Despite that, he has been detained at the U.S. Marine Brig in Quantico, Virginia for 5 months and for 2 months before that in a military jail in Kuwait, under conditions that constitute cruel and inhumane treatment, and by the standards of many nations, even torture. Interviews with several people directly familiar with the condition of Manning's detention, ultimately including a Quantico Brig official, Lieutenant Brian Villard, confirm much of what they conveyed, establishes that the accused leaker, Bradley Manning, is being subjected to detention conditions likely to create long-term psychological injuries. Glenn Greenwald has a lengthy piece at Salon.com that you should check out on this subject. He writes about those conditions under which PFC Bradley Manning, presumed to be the source of classified documents published by WikiLeaks having to do with Iraq, is being held at the Marine Brig in Quantico. A statement from one of the people involved in his detention, quote, Since his arrest in May, Manning has been a model detainee without any episodes of violence or disciplinary problems. He nonetheless was declared from the start to be a, quote, maximum custody detainee, end quote, the highest and most repressive level of military detention. The highest and most repressive level of military detention, which then became the basis for the series of inhumane measures imposed on him. From the beginning of his detention, Manning has been held in intensive, solitary confinement for 23 out of 24 hours every day. For 7 straight months and counting, he sits completely alone in his cell. Even inside his cell, his activities are heavily restricted. He's barred even from exercising and is under constant surveillance to enforce those restrictions. For reasons that appear completely punitive, he's being denied many of the most basic attributes of civilized imprisonment, including even a pillow or sheets for his bed. For the 1 hour per day when he is freed from this isolation, he is barred from accessing any news or current events programs. Lieutenant Villard protested that the conditions are not, quote, like jail movies where someone gets thrown into the hole, end quote, but confirmed that he is in solitary confinement, isolated, entirely alone, in his cell, except for the 1 hour per day he is taken out. Bradley Manning, 22 years old, who thought he was protecting and defending the U.S. Constitution, which is what he swore to do. But I'll tell you what, you cross the capitalists like this, and these sons of bitches will pick the flesh off your bones. Remember what happened to Jose Padilla?
Men, are you?
Sponsored by Evolvefish.com, selling American-made weapons of mass information, stickers, buttons, gear. Okay, let's start over. This hour is sponsored by Evolvefish.com, selling American-made weapons of mass information, stickers, buttons, shirts, and other subversive gear. Check them out at Evolvefish.com before it's too late. All right, a couple of quick emails here. I did want to get hung up on this topic. Like I said, I got this right before the program tonight. Sheila sent it to me. I was just kind of dumbfounded, like, what? This again? But, and I just got this rush of deja vu. Like, first gun I ever bought. Handgun, not, well, no, first gun. I didn't have shotguns or rifles back then. But it was during the Cuban Missile Crisis. I was very young, but I was terribly afraid that we were going to have thermonuclear war, and I would survive, and the cities would be devastated. I lived out in the country then, right across the road from a huge strawberry farm. And I figured I would need something to protect myself. So I went to a pawn shop and bought a .38 Spanish revolver. Big sucker. And all my friends were going, you're going to protect yourself against nuclear weapons with that. I said, no, not against nuclear weapons. So here we are again. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico writes, the lowdown on civil defense is that it's pretty much pointless. By the late 60s, most mayors of major cities told the federal government they couldn't evacuate their cities, and there simply wasn't adequate food and shelter to protect entire city populations. The Soviets were no different. Their only civil defense plan was for Moscow residents to head for the subways because they were about 300 feet deep, even though there was no food, no ventilation, and not nearly enough water and sewage capacity. In his documentary series, War, Gwyn Dyer notes that Moscow residents found it very droll to tell him that the acronym for Soviet civil defense was the Russian word for coffin. And let's not forget that the government plans things well in advance. This may be the early propaganda for an attack on Iran. And Tom in Joshua Tree, California writes, okay, Mike, or hi, Mike. Oh, okay, now I get it. Federal armed robbery, then murder the victims to intimidate all witnesses. How easy. A few nuclear blasts around the country is simply a matter of the corporatist bottom line. It wipes out all those without bomb shelters, thus takes care of homelessness, eliminates the poor, solves childhood hunger, care for the elderly and the disabled. It also thins out the ranks of the middle class, thus solving the mortgage problem. Plus, it creates jobs. Gravediggers, decontamination workers, federal and local execution squads for those too costly to care for. A big boom in the medical aid professions and loads of money for health insurance, since with an exterminated base, everybody gets to keep the money. This has been done before, and it works. First, genocide of the Native American and take their land and riches, then genocide of the American citizen and take our money. Hell, they can always import a few hundred million from China. And this is what those bastards voted for. Go figure. Tom in Joshua Tree, California. Bradley Manning. This kid is 22. I seriously have sweaters and t-shirts in my bureau drawer older than Bradley Manning. And here this kid is with the full force of the military industrial security state crushing him. And like I mentioned, Jose Padilla, and I used to pronounce it Padilla, but I was told that this family pronounces it Padilla. Jose Padilla, remember him? He was held for, what, 3 years, 4 years on charges of terrorism until the Bush crime family drove him completely mad, completely insane, to the point where even after the federal judiciary ordered him released or charged. And I don't even know the outcome of that. Don't send it to me, because I there's no point. Whatever happened to Jose Padilla? Is he still in the subterranean caves that the security state has prepared for people like him, people like Bradley Manning, people like you? All they have to do is look at your computer. Bradley Manning, 22. Do you remember when you were 22? Oh, my God, when I was 22, the only thing I could think about was getting laid. or getting high, or I don't know. Of course, that didn't last very long. You know, the military found me when I was 24. But here's a kid, 22, who has been alleged to be the link between all these cables regarding, was it Iraq? Was it Afghanistan? Was it the videotape? What was it? There was a videotape of the murder of 12, 11, 9. Was it 7? Was it 20? Civilians, including two Reuters journalists and kids in the vehicle. And shoot, go ahead, shoot, kill him, kill him. And Julian Assange, is he out yet? What's his bond? $300,000. And what do the newest document dump show? The asininity, the stupidity, the duplicity, the mind-murdering senselessness, and bureaucratic horse crap involved in running two wars and keeping track of all the 10 soldiers. I'm not talking about the people in uniform. I'm talking about the heads of state. And understand that Hillary Clinton is just on the phones, you know, trying to calm everybody down. Look what's happening in Italy. To change the subject, Berlusconi, someone who is, I mean, he makes Mussolini look like, I don't know, like a boisterous teenager. Here's Berlusconi. Are they going to string him up from a lamppost? Christ, there's not enough lampposts in Rome to string up his girlfriends along with him. Isn't that what they did to Mussolini? With his mistress? And what's going on in Italy? Riots, full scale. What's going on in Britain? Riots. What's going on in where else? Spain? Greece? Ireland? Capitalism. That's where this comes from. Every single bit of it. You do get that. I don't care what you want to do about any of this. At least understand what the cause of it is. Please. Are you fascist about to lose? You fascist about to lose. You fascist about to lose. You're about to lose. You fascist about to lose. I say, are you fascist about to lose? You fascist about to lose.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So I was out and about today and stopped at a red light, and there's a minivan in front of me, a Honda. What's the Honda minivan, Kathy? Odyssey, yeah. And there are two bumper stickers in the back window, not on the bumper. So I guess it would be back window stickers, right? One says simply, bring back capitalism. The other one says, the problem with socialism is what do you do when the other person's money runs out? And, you know, I saw that and I thought, you know, how could somebody be this ignorant? Even allowing for the fact that, you know, I saw this in one of the suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia, A. B, it was heavily Republican, and all Republicans are dumber than a pile of dog droppings. But still, bring back capitalism? And does this person, the other one that said, you know, what did I just say? Social, what was it? Socialism, socialism works until the other person's money runs out or something. And I started thinking, the person that has these two stickers in their window, have they been living in a cave for the past 8 or 9 years? Are they not aware that the socialism they're talking about is a socialism that we always come up with when the capitalists get their testicles in a ringer and we're supposed to ease the pressure? We're supposed to reverse the ringer. Oh, here, let me help. How much do you need this time? Trillions? Oh, okay. How can people be this stupid? Bring back capitalism. The Senate, as you know, today approved the $858 billion, let's just call it $1 trillion, okay? The Senate today approved the $1 trillion tax plan negotiated by the White House and Republican leaders. The first concrete product of a new era of divided government and acid compromise. Woo! Who wrote that sentence? David Herzenhorn over at the, yes, I know, New York Times. The first concrete product of a new era of divided government and acid compromise. Yow! How did that get past the editor? I like that. The vote was 81 to 19. All 100 senators voted, 81 to 19, as Democrats yielded in their long push to end the Bush-era lowered tax rates for high-income taxpayers, and Republicans agreed to back, this guy's supposed to be a writer, but listen to what he says, to back a huge economic stimulus package, including an extension of jobless benefits for the long-term unemployed and one-year payroll tax cut for most workers, with the entire cost added to the federal deficit. A huge stimulus package? Extending people's unemployment comp? Oh well. Now, of course, the bill goes to the House, where the Democrats there said they expected to bring the bill to the floor tomorrow. The Democrats, having somehow figured out how to walk around the halls of Congress with wet pants from peeing themselves because of the way the Democrats, you know, with John Boehner crying all the time and the Democrats peeing their pants all the time every time the Republicans go, boo, boo, oh, you wonder how anything gets done. The Democrats said that everything will be approved this week, despite opposition among rank-and-file Democrats who are still intent on making changes to that provision that grants the tax exemption to wealthy estates. You know, what the brain-dead Republicans love to call the death tax. It's a death tax. There's an editorial today in the Times about, hey, do away with the inheritance tax and just tax it as income. Republicans have said they will not accept any change. Immediately, the Democrats ran to the cloakroom to change their trousers once again, third time in one day. Oh, we peed ourselves again. Yes, we peed ourselves again. Why? Because the Republicans said they wouldn't accept any changes to the... Oh, I see. Okay, I'm running out of dry pants. Ah, ooh, it's rough being a Democrat. It is rough being a Democrat.
is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, there was a press briefing today, and I'll be damned, I didn't hear anything about it. Now, I'm not saying that I watched all the television all day. I didn't watch C-SPAN and C-SPAN 1 and C-SPAN 2 and MSNBC and CNN and ABC and CBS and NBC and CNBC. I just didn't. But I didn't hear anything on the evening news or the little bit of CNN and MSNBC that I did watch. Anything, any coverage at all of a news conference or press conference that was held today at 3 p.m. at the Institute for Policy Studies in D.C. At that news conference was Daniel Ellsberg, Pentagon Papers, Michael Ferner, Veterans for Peace, National President, Leah Bolger, Veterans for Peace, Vice President, retired Navy Commander Mike Prisner, Iraq vet and co-founder of March Forward, and Ray McGovern, retired CIA official. They were at the press briefing. I'll be damned if I heard anything about it. How about you? Tomorrow at 10 a.m., military veterans will lead a nonviolent act of civil resistance at the White House to protest the ongoing U.S. wars and occupations. Veterans for Peace organizers expect this to be the largest veteran-led resistance since the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan began. The press release says veterans are ready to risk their own personal liberty and are calling on others to do the same. The letter sent to Obama said, quote, "We will come in person to the White House to meet with you, or until we are dragged away in full view of our nation and the world, military veterans carrying our nation's flag, seeking a meeting with the president in the season of peace," end quote. And then the ad, quote, We have killed over a million innocent people in these wars and made millions more homeless. Adds Mike Fermer, former Navy hospital corpsman. We have killed over a million innocent people in these wars and have made millions more homeless. Does anybody give a goddamn about what this man is saying? Apparently nobody in the national media. We have killed over a million innocent people in these wars and made millions more homeless. That's an astonishing sentence, isn't it? And nobody really cares. Well, I'm not talking about you. You care. I care. These people care. He added, millions of Americans are out of work and literally out in the cold. Clearly, our war economy values empire and death over jobs and real security. We are taking a stand for peace. The troops, mercenaries, and drones must come home now. Statement from Mike Ferner in a letter to Obama. December 3rd. Woo! It's almost 2 weeks ago. Have you heard about this? After a brief rally at Lafayette Park, veterans and supporters will proceed to the White House to deliver postcards to the president from thousands of Americans who want these wars stopped. Rally speakers will include Daniel Ellsberg, Ray McGovern, Chris Hedges, Mike Prisner, or Prisner, I guess it's Prisner, Dr. Margaret Flowers. Elaine Brower, a military anti-war military mom and one of the event's main organizers, said, quote, "The purpose of this demonstration is simple and clear. We are showing that resistance to these wars and occupations will continue until they are ended, whether those wars are conducted by soldiers, mercenaries, or drones in Afghanistan, Iraq, Pakistan, or Yemen. Children are being orphaned, maimed, and killed every day in our name with our tax dollars. Soldiers and civilians die in order to generate profits for the corporate war machine that is draining the country dry." So said a former U.S. Army paratrooper. How long are we going to let this go on? How long are we going to let this go on? Tomorrow at 10 a.m., Dan Frumkin, writing at Huffington Post, says even if Obama today attempted to put a good face on the war in Afghanistan, Vietnam-era whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, several dozen other anti-war protesters will be chaining themselves to the White House fence, inviting arrest in the name of peace. God, we've seen this before, too, haven't we? The nuclear bomb thing in the New York Times, and now the nuclear bomb thing from the 50s, and now this from the 60s. Gosh, what's going on? Mike Ferner, the president of Veterans for Peace, said, quote, "We are dedicated to exposing the true cost of war and militarism. We have killed well over 1 million people. We've orphaned and displaced 5 times that number at least. And here in our own country, we've managed to throw millions of people out of work and out of their homes. There is a connection there. That connection is the true cost of war. The true cost of war. The true cost of war." Obama has issued a statement, as have his military commanders in Afghanistan, citing progress in that war. During his visit to Bagram Air Base earlier this month in Afghanistan, Mr. Obama telegraphed his position by telling the troops that, "Thanks to your service, we're making important progress. You are protecting your country." You are protecting your country? From what? Goat herders? Opium smugglers? Poppy growers? Functionally illiterate tribesmen? Who are going to do what? Jump in their Toyotas and drive here? Afghanistan doesn't even have a goddamn airplane! You are protecting your country. You are protecting your country. By being over here, all 50, 60, 80, 90, 100,000, how many? You don't even know anymore, true seeker, and neither do I. By being over here, in these vast numbers, tens of thousands of American soldiers, you are protecting your country. You're protecting your country. Daniel Ellsberg took particular umbrage at Obama's claim that troops in Afghanistan are keeping Americans safe. He said, quote, "I regard that last assurance as a lie, as a big lie." Ellsberg said Obama knew full well when he announced a major troop escalation plan a year ago that the war was unwinnable and that putting in more troops would actually bolster the Taliban and by extension Al-Qaeda by helping their recruiting efforts. Ellsberg, who is 79 years old, for Christ's sake, 79-year-old men have to lead this? He said, I'm sorry, I don't mean to yell, I'm sorry. He said, quote, "It is our military operations that are not only failing to protect Americans, they are endangering Americans," end quote. Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst turned activist, paraphrasing Martin Luther King Jr., said, quote, "There comes a time when you need to put your body in it. If the making of peace means prison, that's where we need to be," end quote. Cindy Sheehan, Code Pink co-founder, Media Benjamin, Ellsberg, McGovern, Mike Ferner. Be short, speechifying across Pennsylvania Avenue and Lafayette Park, across from the White House, and then across the street. What do you want to bet that Mr. Obama will be otherwise engaged someplace? I'm sure the Washington, D.C. police will be out in full force. Because, I mean, for Christ's sake, a 79-year-old man chaining himself to the fence, that's a threat. The co-founder of Code Pink, Medea Benjamin, whose sole purpose on earth seems to be to try to find peace somewhere. Is it over here? Is it under this table, behind this rock? Is it up in this tree? Where is peace? And Cindy Sheehan, oh, God forbid that she speaks again. Woman who still is waiting for an answer from George W. Bush. Why did you kill my son? It's tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning.
When your only friend is gone, and every time you look around, well, it all just seems to change. When you've got a friend to call, when nothing's making
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour was sponsored by EvolveFish.com, selling American-made weapons of mass information, including stickers, buttons, shirts, and other subversive gear. Check them out at EvolveFish.com or go to MikeBeloy.com and you'll see their banner. Click on the banner. While you're at MikeBeloy.com, I want you to take a look. Kathy wrote her blog today, and she has a picture there of an American soldier holding a mortally wounded Iraqi baby? Afghan baby? I know that there have been some horrific pictures. Of horrifically wounded or dead children. I mean, it's one thing for adults to want to kill each other and blow things up, but Jesus Christ Almighty. Kids, if you have kids or nieces or nephews or grandchildren, take a look at the picture. I dare you. Andre writes in, regarding the veterans' press conference today and what's going to happen tomorrow, silence equals death in the media. Mainstream media has its marching orders. They are the PR firms of the mega corporations. To refer to dead children as collateral damage. This is what Bob Alexander sent in to me, a link to, I forget his name now. I've got it someplace here in this stack of stuff. Psychopaths. Government policy, domestic and foreign. Not just this government, but most governments, most empires, certainly all empires. And not most governments, all governments. The policies are put together by psychopaths because the policies never benefit the population. Never. Not once, not ever. They may give the illusion, but the ultimate goal is to utterly enslave mentally, spiritually, physically, morally, emotionally, the population. Go back and read 1984. It's all there. It's all there. So tomorrow, at 10 o'clock in the morning, veteran soldiers, veteran journalists, veteran government operatives like Daniel Ellsberg, veterans, mothers of veterans, people who are on this planet, like Medea Benjamin, to find a way, if one exists, to convince people that killing each other in all the different ways we do that, economically, militarily, psychically, is not good. It really isn't good. That's what Medea Benjamin's purpose is. So these people will get together in Lafayette Park tomorrow, speechify a little bit, get real cold from the snow and the sleet and the drizzle. Might even be a few teabaggers around to scream cuss words at them, give them the finger, call them communists, tell them to go home, tell them to get a job. You know, the stuff that Republicans do. But a 79-year-old man leading this, more or less, I realize there's no real leadership here. This is a group of people who have gotten together. But Daniel Ellsberg, my God. I mean, when Dr. King made his speech at the West Side, was it West Side, Riverside Baptist Church, where he switched from being, as far as media is concerned, as far as corporate capitalist America is concerned, he switched from being a voice for the oppressed Negro into being a voice for peace and justice. Justice. All sorts of justice. That's when the decision was made to kill him. At the time, he was what, 34? When the decision was made at the highest levels of the U.S. government that this was one Negro that had to be eliminated. Where are the 36-year-olds now? 34-year-olds. Hello? Hello? Anybody home? This would be Daniel Ellsberg's 80th arrest for civil disobedience. Like the abandoned Roman Catholic priest, Father Roy Bourgeois, who has for 15 years, 19 years, 20 years, led peace demonstrations against School of the Americas, Fort Benning, Georgia. How old is he? How old is Father Bourgeois? In his 70s now? So, what's it going to take? Maybe tomorrow will be the spear tip, the spear point, the tip of the spear aimed right at the filthy, degenerate, disgusting, vile heart of capitalism and war and death and destruction. What do you think? All right, we're going to shift gears and come back and talk about some other stuff. Stay with us, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. This hour's sponsor is Ian McShane. He is the sponsor of this Hour of the Malloy Show. Thanks so much for your support. Did he write that, or do we say that? Huh? Oh, we're saying that. Ian McShane is the sponsor of this Hour of the Malloy Show. Thanks so much for your support, Ian McShane. When was it? Yesterday, the day before, more revelations about the insanity that ricocheted around inside Richard Nixon's head and Henry Kissinger's head. Tapes, more Nixon tapes were released. And in this latest group, Nixon and Kissinger are sitting there discussing that the Irish are all drunks. Black folks need to go through 500 years of inbreeding before they will be equal to whites. The Jews are cowards. Astonishing. Not so much the Nixon part. Nixon, by any measure, was a crazy person. High functioning, but crazy nonetheless. But Henry Kissinger? Doctor? Herr Professor? Henry Kissinger, a Jew? In today's New York Times, there's a letter to the editor from one Marion Kaplan in New York. Kaplan writes, as a child of refugees from Nazi Germany and a professor of modern Jewish history at New York University, I am horrified by the 1973 remark by Henry A. Kissinger, captured on the tapes. Quote, this is Kissinger. And if they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern. End quote. Kissinger. Nixon's anti-Semitism, Mr. Kaplan writes, and general racism come as no surprise, but it is appalling that less than 30 years after some of Mr. Kissinger's and my own relatives and countless other victims perished in the Holocaust, he can say something so despicable. And if they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern. Kaplan concludes, a comment like this may offer new insight into the mentality of a man whose real politic, this would be Kissinger, gave us Augusto Pinochet and the bombing of Cambodia. You know, I've mentioned several times in this program, and most recently an essay that Bob Alexander sent me about the rise of the psychopaths who have been instrumental in the founding and maintaining of just about every empire in the history of the human race, including our own. Now, by psychopath, the definition, of course, is just a standard operating definition. Somebody who is amoral, who can engineer, plan, and execute genocide. What is the difference between the genocide perpetrated against the Jews and the genocide perpetrated against the East Timorese and the genocide perpetrated against Native Americans and the genocide perpetrated against the Aborigines and the genocide, you get the point. The establishment of these capitalist so-called free market societies, these so-called democratic societies, or the monarchies, or the dictatorships, or the communists. Yeah, it doesn't make any difference. How many people were starved to death by Stalin? How many by Mao? So, the difference, of course, is a qualitative difference, certainly not quantitative. psychopaths. Psychopaths who are in charge. Henry Kissinger, by any definition, was a full-blown psychopath. Dick Nixon was so goddamn insane as to render anything he said to have been murderous rhetoric, the consequences for which Nixon ignored. And it's not just Nixon. I mean, Jesus. Well, him too. The establishment of the Catholic Church, psychopaths. How many millions, tens of millions were butchered? Butchered, slaughtered, so that the Catholic Church could be established. I mean, it goes on and on. But it certainly is a theory worth considering that, and I don't think it's theory. I really don't. That the rise of the psychopathic class has been the driving force in establishment of empires, nation states, capitalist enterprises, transnational corporations. We talked last night about Nigeria. Dick Cheney and his mob at Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root, violating every single moral tenet or principle of justice in corrupting the government of Nigeria so that Halliburton and Dick Cheney could have access to natural gas fields where Kellogg Brown and Root, the company that murders American soldiers through poison food and ill-wired shower stalls, so American service people are electrocuted to death. Cheney, the son of a bitch who has no heartbeat, who continues to wander the earth like some perverted Diogenes, only he's not looking for an honest man. He's looking for someone else into whom he can sink his fangs. Who stops Dick Cheney? Nobody. Who stops Halliburton? Nobody. Who stops any of these pigs? Nobody. It just goes on and on and on and on. I found that letter particularly poignant, coming from a man whose family, but then so did Kissinger's family, whose family members were destroyed. Not executed, not gassed, not burned, but the more profoundly ending statement, destroyed by the Nazis. And Kissinger can sit there and say, well, you know, gas chambers in Russia would not be our concern. You know, if they were gassing the Jews in Russia, not our concern. You know, maybe humanitarian concern, but...
And even the qualifier on the humanitarian concern, maybe...
Maybe the murder of thousands in Chile is a humanitarian concern, but it's not ours. Southeast Asia, Central America, not ours.
You know, the thing that's astonishing to me is how most of us can maintain sanity in an insane world. How do we do that? We draw inward, try to focus on our spouse, our kids, our family, grandchildren, painting the house, mowing the lawn, finding a job. Huh? There he is. We'll be right back.
Dear George W. Bush, if there's anything you know, please send me a letter. P.S. Kiss my ass.
Heresy.
I believe that God made me a woman. I feel it in my heart, and this bitch's voice must be heard. A sex change is the only certain way to preserve the sanctity of marriage. We are living in historic times. We are living in a time of great change. Our leadership and resolve can light the way for others. And having come this far, and in the unfolding of the years, this country has a new friend called Vice President Cheney. Dick is a killer.
Don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
This hour of the Malloy program is sponsored by Ian McShane. Thank you for your support. It is 22 past the hour. The Republicans are about to take over. Actually, the Republicans have been in charge since December 12, 2000. We had a temporary illusion for 2 years, the past 2 years, that the Democrats had regained control of the House, the Senate, and the White House. But as we've witnessed, that was not the case at all. The Republicans remain firmly in control by using every parliamentary trick established by the crazy people in the Senate over the years, the psychopaths, to deny the will of the people. The will of the people is a pain in the ass when it interferes with the will of the capitalists or the corporatists. Yada, yada, yada. But now the Republicans are back. Oh, with a vengeance. With so much fury, so much fire, that Barack Obama has been converted from a center-rightist into a Republican himself, to the point that he trots out that Republican Bill Clinton to explain why it's okay. It's really okay. Hey, listen, everything's going to be fine if we just go ahead and just give everything to the rich people. Give it all. Give every bit of it. So the Republicans come January are going to, they cannot wait. Investigations, hearings. We're going to get this Negro in the White House. We're going to get this son of a bitch and all of his people, the ones that we have not confirmed. He doesn't even have a full staff yet. He's been in office 2 years. He doesn't even have a full staff. Look at all the vacancies on the federal bench. We're going to fill those real quick. Well, in the middle of all this, it's easy to forget what Democrats have done. The Democratic era is over. The era of the progressive left is over. It started with the election of Franklin Roosevelt in 1932, and it ended with the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980. Not too bad a run. What was that? 38 years? Is that all it was? But the progressive era in modern history in this country is finished, and it will not come back. Ever. It needs to be replaced with something a lot more radical. And the reason that is true is because the progressive era now has been so bastardized, demonized, and turned into something it never was. And the American public has been so brainwashed, so completely confused as to what the progressive agenda really was, that it's time to replace it. A classic example of doing the Winston Smith Act on progressivism. It's down the memory hole. It has been excised from your history and from my history. It's not even talked about in school anymore. Let me ask you something. Do you have kids in school, high school, even college? Ask them if, when they were in elementary school, you may know the answer to this, if any of their teachers told them anything, or do they know anything about one name, just one simple name. Here's a name. Samuel Gompers. Samuel Gompers. Here's another one. John L. Lewis. But ask your kids, next time they're home from school or if they're in high school, just say, hey, listen, this guy on the radio wanted me to ask you, what does the name Samuel Gompers mean to you? Anything? Try that. The reason I say that is when I went to school in the 50s in American history and in our civics classes, Samuel Gompers was one of the first people that we learned about. Go ahead, look it up on Wikipedia. If you're over a certain age, you might know who he was. But I doubt if 2% of the people listening to this program know who it is, which is not your failure, not at all. I'm not castigating you or saying, oh, aren't you stupid? I'm saying this is how the American education system has been so perverted by the corporatists. Not because we're not teaching creationism, to the contrary, because we're not teaching enough of our own literal history, our real history, real science, real math. You understand what I'm saying? All right, when we come back, I have a little bit more to say about that. You know what? Just for the sake of memory, because this is soon going to fade away. It's going to be totally gone. But I want to restate once again what the Democrats have done for workers. The past will learn with workers' blood. Spikes of the bosses, we must fight for. In the cities and the farmlands, the trenches grow mud. Wars have always been the bosses wiser. The union forever. Men, are you?
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour. The piece that I quoted for several times was written by Clint Gold. Clint Gold is a former mayor of Moore, Oklahoma, and retired savings and loan executive back in the day when savings and loans were kind of like the movie It's a Good Life. Or no, It's a Wonderful Life. I haven't seen that enough yet this season. So Clint Gold wrote this, and it was, oh my God, over a decade ago now. And, the facts that Clint Gold puts in this letter are rapidly becoming non-facts. They're disappearing down the memory hole. The setup here, let me give you the backstory. There's a party that Clint Gold and his wife are attending in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's a TV football party, and the place is chock-a-block with right-wingers and Republicans. And Clint and his wife are the only liberals in the crowd. And in the course of the party, and apparently some of the Republicans were getting a little bit soused, tossing back one too many Jack Daniels. And as the party moved on, the right wingers became more flushed. Their eyes were bulging a little more, and veins popping in their forehead as they railed against liberal programs, government programs. And finally, a lone liberal voice, that would be Clint's, asked to the crowd in general, "Will you people name me one bill your party ever passed to help the working man of this country?" And nobody could answer until finally one of these right-wingers sputtered out, "Well, what have the Democrats done?" So the liberal, Clint Gold, he started to respond with a few programs, and he was interrupted by howling and disdain and middle fingers and, you know, typical stuff you get from right-wingers. Brain dead, participants in their own destruction, ultimately. And Gold noted that he had not promised they'd like the problems that or the programs that he was about to name, and he asked if he had a moment to complete a statement. You know, can you guys shut up and just let me finish? Well, they quieted down for a couple of minutes, and Clint Gold went on. Now, listen up. Clint Gold spoke of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the Peace Corps, unemployment insurance, welfare for the poor as well as for the corporations. These are all programs that the Democrats put in place. Civil rights, student grants, student loan programs, safety laws in the workplace like OSHA, environmental laws, prevailing wage laws. These are all Democratic programs. The right to collective bargaining, which in turn brought about paid medical insurance, paid vacations, pensions. Remember those? Workers' comp. The Marshall Plan for the rest of the world. Flood disaster insurance. School lunch programs. Women's rights. A woman's right to vote. Clint also spoke of the Fair Labor Standards Act, which established a minimum wage, which also put in place child labor laws, you know, to prevent nine-year-olds from going to work in factories and mines. Republicans thought that was a good idea, to have the little bastards go to work. Time and a half pay for over a 40-hour work week. These are all Democratic programs, all Democrats. Clint also talked about FHA and HUD with its public housing, which at one time in this country was a pretty good deal for people. It really was. It has fallen into disrepair and disrepute and is now being ended. But at one time, proper housing for poor folks, white and black, mostly white, was a good idea. Urban renewal, at one time, that was a good idea. $44 million residential homes built because of these Democrat-inspired programs. And as Clinton pointed out, before World War II, almost 70% of our nation were renters. And by the 1970s, this had been reversed. Almost 70% of our nation were homeowners or home buyers. Clint goes on, farm conservation subsidies. You know, to conserve the family farm. This is before the big, massive pig factories and hog producers, the big factory farms. So back in the day, 30s, 40s, 50s, the family farm. U.S. Department of Agriculture programs. The Farmers Home Administration. That was set up because the bankers didn't want to make loans out in the country. Small flood control lakes. More than 3,000 in Oklahoma alone. Rural water districts. Rural electricity. There was a thing that most people don't remember, REA, Rural Electricity Administration, that brought electricity to the countryside. What? Oh, my God, Malloy, what are you talking about, the 18th century? No, I'm talking about 80 years ago. The GI Bill, that was a Democrat program. The Republicans at the time bitterly opposed the GI Bill. Why? They were salivating over millions of returning veterans that they could hire as cheap labor. Always cheap labor. You ever notice that about the capitalists? More than 8 million American veterans, up to 10 years ago, used college benefits, creating millions of entrepreneurs. Most of the people in that so-called greatest generation never dreamed of college. And for the unemployed returning veteran, get this, back in 1946, 47, 48, there was a $20 a week stipend for 52 weeks to help these guys get started. 20 bucks a week. That was a lot of money back then. The Veterans Administration provided more than 2 million home loans. Veterans Administration. That was a Democrat idea, of course. For the banksters at the at this party, Clint tried to point out that the liberals saved their industry with the creation of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the Federal Savings and Loan Insurance Corporation, that insured deposits and saved Wall Street, the Democrats did with the establishment of the Securities and Exchange Commission back in the day when these agencies really meant something, when they weren't working for the banksters and the thugs and the thieves and the liars and the capitalists, when they were working for the people to keep the predators at bay as much as possible. The oil men, the people in the oil industry, practically crawled up to Franklin Roosevelt at a time when East Texas oil was 4 cents a barrel. And the Texas oilmen begged Roosevelt to save their industry, and he did. He came up with prorationing, which overturned the rule of capture in the days of flush production were over. Prorating in the oil industry served it and the nation well. All that's gone now, of course. But back in the day, 80 years ago, the list went on and on and on. And as Clint pointed out, the people at the party lost interest very quickly because all of a sudden Clint was hammering them with way too much truth. Clint wrote at the time that the Republicans were weary, inattentive. And so he, again, Clint challenged the other people at the party to offer up any Republican legislative examples, anything that was comparable to the list Clint Gold just read off to these morons. Anything. Is there anything the Republican Party has done for workers, for the working class, for the lower middle class, the middle class, anything? Can you cite one thing that was positive and constructive? Clint said, I'm sure your party has authored one or two comparable bills from time to time, but I can't think of any. And apparently you can't either. What it boils down to is this. The liberals dragged you into the 20th century, scratching and screaming with your heels in the mud, fighting anything that was progressive, everything that made this country great. You Republicans have never understood that the spending power of blue-collar workers obtained, that power obtained through Democrats and unions, is what really made this country great. You really believe the so-called good life was obtained from your own endeavors? You cloak your greed in religion and patriotism, railing against any form of tax, never comprehending that these programs have benefited all of us and our country? Well, Clint Gold almost didn't make it out of the house. He and his wife didn't even get to see the end of the football game. But he made some points that the Republican pigs at this party couldn't stand, they couldn't handle, and they never could respond to. And you know what? Those points remain the same to this moment. I challenge any right-winger, and this is a challenge I've had out there for 20 years in the radio business. You tell me one thing your party has done for the working class.
Because I'm never gonna be enough space.
Ten before the hour, and this hour has been sponsored by Ian McShane. Thanks for your support. We appreciate it very much. It was in the Times recently. Maybe it was today or yesterday. The Air Force is barring its personnel from using work computers to view the websites of the New York Times and more than 25 other news organizations and blogs that have posted the WikiLeaks cable, well, the State Department cables that were obtained by WikiLeaks. Yesterday, Air Force officials said that they are telling their personnel, you may not look. You may not look! Which is, it really is insane. The Air Force is trying to stop its personnel from having access to information that virtually everyone else in the world can see. Now, it's not just the Air Force. Spokesman for the Army, the Navy, and the Marines said they were not blocking the websites of news organizations, largely because guidance has already been issued by the Obama administration and the Defense Department directing hundreds of thousands of federal employees and contractors not to read the cables that are posted all over the internet. Don't you read them! Unless the workers have the required security clearance or authorization. Boop, 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 boop. The Air Force's action here was reported first by the Wall Street Journal's website yesterday. And as the Times points out, it underscores the wide-ranging impact of the recent release of secret State Department documents by WikiLeaks. And five news organizations, including the New York Times. And it also illustrates the insanity, the contortions that the military and other government agencies appear to be going through to limit the spread of this information, all of which has become completely available in the public domain. Anybody. All right, soldier, you're not in a combat zone. You work at a facility here in the United States, and at 5 o'clock, you go back to your barrack, or your quarters, or your apartment off base, or your house with your family. Don't you dare turn on your computer and go to the New York Times website and read this stuff. Do you understand? Sir, yes, sir! Oh, my God. You see, what this gets down to, you're way ahead of me. You already know this. If you've read anything by Smedley Butler, the two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, Marine veteran, general, lieutenant general, I believe. Lieutenant general, that'd be 3 stars, wouldn't it? Smedley Butler, who wrote War is a Racket, among other things. He was referring to the use of the United States military at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. And so you're way ahead of me. But if you've read Smedley Butler, you know, and if you've read other anything, I mean anybody, anyone who has been a critique of war as a furtherance of diplomacy, you know that the key, the absolute key, to sending people to go kill or be killed, to go destroy or be destroyed, is to keep them totally ignorant of the truth. As soon as a soldier who's in a combat position finds out the truth and is able to let that truth motivate him, and I say him because I'm talking about combat personnel, he will either turn his weapon on his supervisor, the superior officer, or he will find a way to get out of military service. It's still, after all these years, astonishing to me to hear the way certain right-wingers in this country who never served in the military try to blame the media for our ass-kicking defeat in Southeast Asia and Vietnam, when in fact, it was our own actions. You know, you have enough soldiers who participate in something like the My Lai massacre, and that was only one that was reported by Seymour Hersh. You have enough soldiers participate in that and realize what they're doing. How slaughtering women and children and old people, slaughtering them, putting them in a ditch and opening fire, whether it was in My Lai or in our war against the Philippines, the Filipinos, in the Spanish-American War, same thing, put them into the the no longer active cone of the volcano and open up with the Gatling guns. It doesn't make any difference. Once the soldiers realize that their job is to murder civilians, to destroy things for the sake of capitalism's need for ever-expanding markets and natural resources, they wake up. Once they realize, wait a second, God damn it, I thought I was fighting for Mom, the flag, and apple pie. This doesn't taste like apple pie. This tastes like bile and blood and guts and dirt. This is not apple pie. So it is extremely necessary. You know, people say truth is the first casualty of war. The first casualty of war is the integrity of the mind of a soldier. That's the first casualty of war. Once you can convince a person to believe absurdities, like we're going to go fight for Mom and apple pie, you have the power to make him commit atrocities. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.